This episode is brought to you by Full Bucket Veterinary Strength Supplements, the leader in digestive health for dogs, cats, and horses.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Chats with the Chatfield. We're your hosts. I'm Dr. Jen the Vet.
And I'm Dr. Jason.
If you have not yet subscribed to our show,
why not?
Just hit that subscribe button today. And if you want to reach us and you've got a message full of love and positivity, you can reach me at jen@chatfieldshow.com.
And for anyone else who wants the honest truth, you can reach me at jason@chatfieldshow.com.
All right, we're going to get right into it, folks. No messing about, no fussing around, because we have a great friend of the show joining us again today. We are going to be talking all about what's new in hemp and with pets. And Jason, do you know what most people call hemp?
No. What do most people call hemp?
CBD.
Oh, CBD. That's what I called it. That's what I was in the most people situation.
Yeah, you are.
I'm always worried about you asking me these questions and I'm not ready for some off-the-wall questions. So I just say, I don't know, rather than open my mouth and prove to everybody how much I don't know.
That you don't know. Okay, well, listen, let's bring the expert in so we can stop like being so ambiguous. So we are welcoming back into the chat room Dr. Joe Wachschlag. He is a double board certified veterinarian, a specialist in both nutrition and veterinary sports medicine and rehabilitation. He is currently a professor at Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine in the clinical nutrition and also in sports medicine and rehabilitation services. And he's the section chief of their nutrition service. This guy's busy.
Yes, that's awesome.
But in addition to that, he also has a side hustle. As if there wasn't enough nutrition going on in his world, he is also the chief medical officer for LA Vet Sciences, and he's been doing that since 2019. So I'm so glad that he was able to carve out some time to join us in the chat room with all of that going on. Welcome back, Dr. Joe.
No, thanks for having me. I had such a good time last time. I figured maybe it'd be worth giving people a little update on what's happened since we last spoke a few years back. So.
Yes, I feel like these days in vet med, if we don't keep up with stuff on a like twice a year basis, we're way behind. I mean, stuff's just happening so fast.
That's for sure. It's a crazy time for veterinarians. Let's put it that way. We're overworked and out 6 months in appointments. It's just, you know, it's great for the profession, but a little mind-boggling, to be honest.
It is. Although I don't know if Dr. Jason falls into that crazy part.
Definitely
not. Is he just
overworked.
Crazy to begin?
Yeah, definitely not overworked. That's
No, we're joking. Okay, so let's get some really
Joe
easy...
picked up all of my slack, by the way. That's what happened.
That's so. Right.
As much as Joe, I'm doing the opposite. So we even it out. So I guess everybody is overworked. Joe and I kind of balance each other. We balance the equation. That's what's happening.
You're spreading gospel, which is good.
That's right.
Holy moly. All right, friends. Let's bring it back to reality just a little bit. So I am excited because I still get a lot of questions from clients about CBD, about hemp, and about what to use, when to use, and all of that. So the last time that you were on, I know we were sort of dispelling the myth that everyone was at that point thinking that hemp or CBD in their pet was going to be the panacea to fix anything and everything that was not yet addressed in their pet. And so we talked about how that's actually not true. It can't fix everything. Are we supposed to still call it? Do we still call it CBD? Do we call it hemp? Like,
yeah, I think the reality back since we've talked, we've kind of started seeing more and more literature come out and certain products may be better than others.
Yep.
We kind of have, we'll say, two different classifications. I'll call it sort of broad spectrum hemp. And then we've got hemp isolate. So isolate some of these cannabinoids, right? So CBD can be an isolate or it can be from the whole hemp plant. And so when it's from whole hemp, it has a lot of other little things in it, like terpenes and other minor cannabinoids. So...
Jason, do you have a dictionary? I feel like we need a dictionary now.
I know. I'm hoping you weren't going to ask me any questions.
I didn't want to
make eye contact with the teacher. I'm like, okay, that's great. I'll write that down. Don't ask me a question. So
that's right.
That sounds super awesome. Like super, any way to break that down even further for the rest of the world to understand?
That's what I'm hoping for. Cannabinoids versus terpenes versus this or that. What are we looking for?
I mean, yeah. I think you know, back in the day when we first talked, a lot of people just talking about CBD, right?
Right.
So this cannabidiol, and cannabidiol is pretty much in everything. And I think just what we're starting to see is that that there are differentiations in the products. I mean, you know, sometimes people will try a CBD isolate, right, which is just that one molecule, and maybe they'll see an effect, maybe they won't. You shouldn't just chalk it up to that doesn't work. You should then maybe move on to a whole hemp product to see if that's any better than the CBD isolate. And so, you know, I think as veterinarians, we've slowly watched sort of the literature kind of evolve, right? And last time we were talking about pain and osteoarthritis. And so at that point, it was like, well, we know it has some application to pain and osteoarthritis. Now we're kind of starting to say, well, we may have other applications. And so things like seizure control have now been pretty well worked out in the vet literature that it can be helpful as an adjunct to the other meds that your dog could be on. We're also seeing itchiness in dogs being resolved in a couple of studies now too. So it's one of
those
things
where...
That's
pretty huge, right? I mean, that's you just said that like nothing, but that's a pretty big problem.
Yeah.
If you think it... Because everyone... You know, we get lots of questions. It's allergy to this, allergy to that, allergic to the world. And you're saying maybe there's some literature saying, hey, this can help that can alleviate some of those symptoms.
Yeah. I mean, I think now we've got not only the Elevet study that we did that was, you know, pretty well, you know, good randomized controlled study that showed that it did, the owners really liked it for the itch. And then, you know, there are a couple of other, we'll call them open label, where people have used it for itch and said, yeah, we put this on top of whatever the dog's already on and the dogs are less itchy. So, and there's becoming, you know, we'll just say there's more and more evidence suggesting we now not only have indication for, you know, the good old fashioned arthritis dog. Now we have indication for itch and seizure. So, you know, we said at the beginning, it's not great for everything. It's not a panacea. We know it may be something that can be utilized for these three conditions now pretty well, right?
Okay, so I have a question about that. And so I'm just going to jump right into the deep end of the itch thing, because I feel like Dr. Rosales, like, definitely is going to be wanting to hear this, right? She's the dermatologist that joins us in the chat room. So how, like, do we, and this is a question we may not know yet, but so, okay, so it makes sense to me that it would be effective for dogs with osteoarthritis, right? Or pets. I mean, we keep saying dogs. Do we know that, are people using this in cats too?
Yeah. We're starting to see it used more and more in cats. And I'll say that not a lot of randomized controlled studies, but there is now some stuff that we're working on, and we think it may be good for, quote unquote, the, we'll call it crazy cat, right? The cat that's, you know, running around chasing your ankles and running around attacking the other cat in the household, right?
Behavior modification. That's what we like with multi-cat households, right?
Right. And I think that's a bigger issue in the cat world than the dog world. And so we're starting to see some real, I mean, every time we do, I'll call them lunch and learns as you know, and as a company, it's kind of like the number one thing we hear from the veterinarians is that, yeah, I gave it to my cat and my cat hated my husband and now he sleeps next to him, you know, things like that. So,
okay. You know, Okay.
Need a little bit of mental tuning sometimes.
Yes. Right. Okay. So there's the cat. So we just, you guys, he just dropped like a huge knowledge bomb in the chat room. So we have crotchety dogs, right? Arthritic dogs that it's helpful for. We have seizure disorders that we know that it is effective on. So when you talk about the itch with CBD, or is it CBD or is it just an overall hemp product, or do you know which cannabinoid it is that's effective against the itch, or do I care? Well, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I guess. Do we care? Well, I mean, you know, we did the, you know, we have the only, folks, let's say, you know, good randomized controlled study out there, kind of going down that route. And of course, we're a whole hemp product at Elevet, so we're going to say that, well, we know that this product works. I can't definitely tell you what you pick up at the farmer's market is going to work the same way, because everything's a little different.
Hello, gas station shoppers. Don't be picking your stuff up at the gas station, friends. Get it from your veterinarian, okay?
Yeah, no gummies.
Oh my gosh.
so you know, I think when we talk about the itch, you know, our study did go into what we'll call it the inflammation portion as well as the itch portion, the pruritus, that is chewing on your paws and the scratch in your ears. And we saw that what we resolved was the we'll just say the neurologic response of the itch. And that starts to make a little sense because we know we affect, you know, OA, it's the neurologic response. It's dampening that we'll just say that appropriate or that the perception of pain, right? And so we're basically dampening through the nervous system the perception of the itch. So the dog doesn't know that it's got skin disease, right? So he doesn't say, oh, I got to chew my paws because they're feeling kind of, you know, kind of uncomfortable.
Right.
Well, I guess that was my point. Like, I have not heard this itch piece yet. And so that was my concern. Like, is it stopping the inflammation that's producing the itch? Or is it sort of breaking that communication chain in the dog system that says, hey, dude, we itch right there. Go scratch that. And it sounds like it breaks that communication chain so that we can get time to fix whatever's causing the itch without the dog continuing to just scratch.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's always the thing. As veterinarians, we always worry that if you itch your ear, you're going to excoriate the skin. You're going to have a secondary infection. You're going to chew your paws. You're going to have an infection. So what we feel is that it's really good for stopping the itch so you don't get that secondary infection and end up at the vet three more times to treat them with antibiotics or antifungals or whatever. So that's kind of been the nice part about this is that we have a lot of drugs, as you know, to help the itch, but they don't work all the time or they stop working. So this just becomes another thing to, you know, for that mild itch, maybe you put it on top the first thing, right? So, you know, you try your antihistamines, you try the Elevate before you go to some of these big guns that may have more side effects, right?
Well, but also I think that for a lot of pets and, you know, our behavior friends in the chat room, we certainly, I think now we have to have like an episode on behavior where we also talk a little bit about CBD for that, because a lot of dogs, that itch becomes a habit. It becomes a habit. And even though whatever stimulated the itch initially for the first 3 years, right, that they were licking that paw is gone, they still do it. It's a soothing behavior. But maybe now, because before we didn't really have stuff that's good at addressing that habit that has formed. But I'm hearing maybe this is a great option for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think in terms of that behavioral piece, that's often what we see is, you know, you've got that, we had a great case of, you know, Malinois who had a lot of vocalizing behaviors and whatnot, as well as the osteoarthritis. And they said, yeah, we think he's more comfortable, but we're even happier about the fact that he doesn't get up and pace, right, at night, or he's not barking at everything that moves, right? So that was kind of like, you know, it's the nice, two-for-one special sometimes.
Yes. Okay. All right, Jason, I interrupted you earlier because I got so excited about this whole new component here.
Yeah, but I already forgot. I was just writing down stuff when you get through talking about all the wonders that is CBD and hemp. I have some questions about formulation and how to apply it and all that kind of stuff. And that's probably going to be a little bit later.
Okay. Well, so let's do this. Let's let everyone recover from the fact that I had no idea that we could use this for itch. And we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
With all the fuss happening in the pet food industry, why not invest in something to help guard against digestive health derangements in your pet? Full Bucket's probiotics are formulated by veterinarians to support your pet's normal digestive health. Your pet's gut microbiome is integral to their immune system performance. Why not add Full Bucket's Daily Dog or Daily Cat probiotic powder to your pet's daily routine to curate, protect, maintain, and strengthen your pet's microbiome? Visit FullBucketHelp.com today to check out all of their veterinary strength supplements.
And we're back. So hopefully you've recovered from the giant knowledge bomb that just went off in the chat room with Dr. Joe telling us about the common clinical things that hemp can be used to effectively treat. We know because there's science behind it. There's data. We're not just making it up or feeling like it works. We know that it works. And so now we're gonna talk about some of the nitty gritty about these products and what's available. And I think, Jason, you mentioned it earlier.
What did I mention? I wrote some other stuff down. Listen, I'm just curious
formulation.
About how to give it. Like, are we talking topical, oral? I can't imagine there's injectable. Spray. I mean, there's all this. I'm very excited about this hemp stuff. I think it's got a lot of applications, and there's many ways to sort of use it. And I still feel like it's the iceberg, right? We see the tip, and there's so much more underneath, and we're just going to keep discovering stuff. And every time we talk to you, it's something else. You just rolled off the itch thing, and that just blew Dr. Jen's mind. Like, I'm not going to stop hearing about that for 2 weeks now. Like, it's crazy, and that's nothing to you, but that's huge. So I'm just curious about if there's any new or different or exciting, you know, formulations in the upcoming future.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where, you know, the cannabinoid science, we'll just say, is starting to take off, right?
Right.
You know, we know that the product from Elevet, through some of these clinical studies, does have these applications. But, you know, we're talking about something that our product is CBD and CBDA. Now, people don't hear about CBDA very often.
Right.
Right. So CBDA is actually the native cannabinoid that's found in the hemp plant that's growing. As soon as I dry it and extract it, it becomes CBD. We actually have the ability to keep the CBDA in there. Right. So it's a half and half blend of CBD and CBDA. Huh. Now, if you start looking at CBDA literature, nobody studies it, even in the human realm or the rodent realm, very poorly studied. But now in veterinary medicine, actually, we're kind of leading compared to our human counterparts, where they're actually using CBDA.
We like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a first, right?
Yes.
We're always taking what we learn from humans and trying to apply it. CBDA, if we go across species now, and I talk about cows, they fed whole hemp to cows, which has only the CBDA in it, and some of the other, we'll call them acidic molecules. And they've shown that they can dampen inflammation and make cows more comfortable on dairy farms, right? So CBDA has application here. You know, so we're different, of course, than some of the other products you'll get. So that's why I say, you know, we know CBDA gets into the blood and it gets into the body a lot better than CBD does. So maybe that's why we're seeing some things that other companies might not see. Now, does CBD work? Yeah, CBD does work for pain, but
I think that's a great point, because we do have to say, when we talk about supplements and nutraceuticals and stuff like that, is in the US, those are not regulated like drugs. And so it is important, like which formulation, which company, what label you pick, because you're trusting that what they're telling you is in the bag is in the bag. And so I think that, I mean, that's one reason. This is not when you want to go generic, you want to go name brand. And that's why you talk to your veterinarian and you get one that they've investigated, that they trust, that they know is in the bag. I mean, for me, I trust you, Dr. Joe. So I feel like if you're telling me that's what's in the bag, it's what's in the bag. And then when you see that clinical response or you don't see it, then you know what's going on. It's not like, well, was there even any stuff
just
in
one
there?
More variable taken away that you can.
Yeah.
You can,
Well, I mean, that's sort of the problem with the nutraceutical market is veterinarians see tons of things every year that are released. And then they're like, well, where's my data?
Mm-hmm.
And then the vet goes, I can't really prescribe or I can't recommend this mm-hmm. type of nutraceutical without a little bit of data. And then you ask them for the data. And so, you know, you got to ask as veterinarians, and that's what you should be talking to your veterinarian about as a pet owner. It's like, what have you seen data on, right?
We know that for pet owners, 80% of them trust a product more when a veterinarian is involved in the mm-hmm. formulation, right? And so
80.
That's a big percentage.
I think I think that should be like 95, right?
Well,
you're saying they trust products more with veterinarians, and it's only 80%? What are the 20%ers doing?
I don't create the data. I just share it with you when I find it.
Okay, carry on.
So it's just something I know.
I don't know about that, Dr. Jen. She said do something different. I'm going to try this. That's
just telling you. No, they trust a product more if a veterinarian is involved in the formulation, right? So we see that with things. So we're seeing that with right now with Elevet, right? That's why we're talking about it, because there's lots of products on the market. Hello, gas station. But you don't trust that that's what's in the bag and that's that there's no toxins in there. Because, you know, a whole episode we talked with you about like how pure is the product, because there's all kinds of heavy metals and stuff that can be contained in a hemp derived product that you don't want. And so you want to make sure that you don't have that.
Yeah. I think that just goes back to, you know, getting products that have, you know, sort of some check and measure, and the National Animal Supplement Council at least is that check and measure. And so, you know, companies that at least have that seal, you can trust a little bit more of having what it says it has in it. And then, you know, secondly, it's like, you know, any good hemp company who's got a product on the market has done the testing for heavy metals, has done the testing for pesticides and solvents from the extract, as mycotoxins, things that can come through in the plant. So, I mean, a good company is going to do all that and won't release it until it actually passes that certificate of analysis. So, I mean, you should... You know, people should be talking to companies about that. And, you know, if you get something at the farmer's market, you ask, do you guys have a certificate of analysis? Is it free of this stuff? If they go, oh, well, I grow it up here in my backyard and I just, you know, I squish it with my feet just like grapes. And then I put it into the
bottle. It's got to be good. It's all natural. It's organic, right?
Right.
It's all organic. It's organic. That's right. Right.
Why are you questioning me? It's organic.
That's right.
That's right.
And if we say it's organic, that means it's magical automatically.
Yeah.
Okay. So is this something we're giving orally, right? We're not, this is not topical or injectable.
I think to Jason's point is that, you know, there actually now are studies since we last talked where they said, you know, well, we're going to try and put it transmucosally on the gums of a dog or a cat and see if it gets absorbed. And it's been shown that oral is still probably the best way to get it in. You know, they've even done it transrectally and showed it didn't get in. If you want to give your dog an enema, a CBD enema, it doesn't
But I mean, that's funny, but it does not get absorbed very well. Huh? I think that's interesting. Huh.
No. So it's like oral still seems to be the best way. And then the injectable stuff is like, well, that's a bit complicated and it's not something that you can give to an owner and say reliably that you can inject your dog, you know, once a week with this, you know, specific formula. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, oral seems to be the best way. And you know, usually it should be in an oil or some kind of food base because it gets absorbed better when it's with a food. And so this is one of these things that's easy for the owner because it's not like, oh, you have to give it an hour before you feed or 2 hours after. Mm-hmm. Putting it in with the food promotes the absorption in general. So
just not butter.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there that one case? Wasn't there that one case of like rancid butter containing hemp or CBD or something? THC, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We don't want high THC in any of these products. And that's what's been nice is that if you look across the board at most of the products that are on the market for dogs and cats, not humans, the THC levels are extremely low. They're below the federal guidelines. And so most of the companies are doing a pretty darn good job of keeping it below the THC threshold that's allowable in a hemp product. So we don't worry too much about that THC effect. But yeah, you're right. There was this whole thing where somebody gave butter that really caused a dog to get pretty darn loopy. And, you know, it was part of the, we'll say, toxicity. And we don't worry about that too much with the hemp products in the vet arena, which is great.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, I know you're looking down. Do you have another question already ready?
No, I just...
I felt like you did.
I have several things, but my question, I think you already answered it. I mean, how, and we just kind of glossed over it. How much are we following the human? Because there's all kinds of human, there's gummies out there and there's all this kind of stuff. So how... And it seems like they just kind of stopped and said, okay, just take some gummies and it solves all of your whatever problems you might have, whether it's you're restless or you're nervous or you're anxious, whatever. And that's what humans tend to do. How much does the veterinary industry follow the humans, or is it even better? Like you said, we're as an industry kind of making strides ahead of the human industry in terms of research and really getting into the weeds of what's happening with this hemp products.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're seeing, which is kind of interesting, is that dogs and cats actually absorb CBD a lot better than people do. And that may be why we're seeing better clinical responses.
Right. Okay. That makes right? sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so in something the human world, study, yeah, they're given huge doses. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 2 to 4 milligrams per kilogram body weight in a dog or a cat. In the human world, they're given 10 and 20 milligrams. Yeah. So, and we actually at Elevet just finished looking at humans, right? And so I was telling you about this whole idea that CBD and CBDA have different absorption, and dogs and cats seem to absorb CBDA better, maybe 2 to 3 fold better, up to 4 fold. We'd looked at it in humans. Humans absorb CBDA 20 fold better than they absorb CBD. So they just don't absorb CBD very well. And every species is going to be different. So if you want to treat a goat, you can't really go by the guidelines of dog and cat, right?
Yeah.
So
CBDA, again, is the native form, not as before you dry it and extract it. That's what's actually in the plant.
It's like if you went and just started chewing on a hemp plant, you would get more CBDA than you would anything else.
And that's easy. That's absorbed better, huh? That's interesting.
Yeah. It's like, that's the stuff we're finding out in the dog and cat world that the human world doesn't even know. And we're finally showing that, you know, hey, humans might benefit better from these acids, this CBDA. So, a lot to learn. I mean, you know, this is a new field, even in humans. It wasn't until 2018 that we could actually really study it because it was now federally legal to use hemp.
That's crazy. That's like,
it was like yesterday.
It really was, right?
So yeah.
Six years ago, but like,
yesterday. Especially because it was pre-blip, right?
Yeah,
it was pre-COVID blip. And so it was a big deal. And then COVID just eclipsed everything in the news and no one was talking about anything except COVID. And I was like, oh, let's get back to what were we talking about
before
that happened? Well, we were talking about CBD and hemp and how we're going to do it. So a lot of the human products that people ask me about for their pet are these oil, like CBD oil, because there's all these shops that have popped up that offer folks those products. And so what I'm hearing, and which is what I think everyone right in the chat room should be hearing, is you can't just go to your local hemp or THC shop and get CBD oil and put it on your dog's food. This is not what you should do, because you may end up with massive overdose. You may end up with underdose. Like, you don't know what you get.
What does the person at the local shop know about dosing a dog, right? They're usually talking about dosing people.
Because I've had them try to tell me that, right? They don't know who I am. And I go in just to see what's up, right? Like just up in this little town, well, not up, but down, like a little south of us. There's a little town that has a couple of shops that popped up. So I just went in to see what was what last year. And they actually have products in there they have a sign on them that say for pets.
Yeah, right.
And then they started, they don't have any idea who I'm, just random person that comes in their shop. They start telling me all about how, oh, do you have a dog that is anxious? Do you have a dog that has separation anxiety? And, you give them this, and if it doesn't work, give them 2 of them. And,
if it doesn't work, give them more.
No, this is what they told me. I ask questions. I wasn't trying to be a jerk, but I ask them questions like, well, what is it that I'm giving them? What else is in there? And what's the dose? And, kind of ambiguous. And so I think that's where you have to trust your veterinarian. And as we always say, if you don't trust your veterinarian, get a new veterinarian. Mm-hmm. And just be cognizant of that, because there is data. And that's what you're getting at, that you're talking about, like you've done these studies and stuff. So there is data, right?
Right. I mean, right now, last time we talked, a veterinarian couldn't even look up a dose.
Right.
Now a veterinarian can go into their Plum's formulary, which we all use, right?
The Bible?
The Bible of dosing. And you can type in CBD or cannabidiol, and it will basically give you the formula. The formulary says for osteoarthritis and seizures, here's what we think you should be using. So it's like, if it's in our Bible now, right? So that was a huge leap forward. For the veterinarian, because now they don't have to remember a dose, or they don't have to worry about it. They can either carry a product like ours, and it's all on the bag form. But now it's like going to your formulary, and you can actually recommend a dose without being sort of blindsided. And when you go to those stores, they start at such a low dose, you're never going to see an effect. So mm-hmm. it's like, start at a real dose. And we know it's safe. There's now, you know, Colorado State's done some great safety stuff now on you know, escalating dose in both dogs and cats. And the group out of Mars did a really nice job of doing, you know, long-term 6-month studies. What happens to a dog or a cat on a 4 mg/kg dose every day? And it's very safe at those doses. So I think we can have the peace of mind as vets that it's not the black box of, I don't know what's going to happen if that dog stays on it for the next year.
But we have a pretty good idea. I think that's great, but maybe I'm not understanding. So, but that's one end, so we know what dose to give. But the other end is we need to get the right product that actually has that amount in the product, right? It's regulated, it's labeled, it's not.
Yeah.
That's the Dr. Jen's point. A couple things about that visit. One, nobody believes they didn't know who you were, because I know you went in there with all of your Dr. Jen DeVette swag.
Nobody
believes that you went out there not advertising. And two, did you call that field research? Is that what you were doing?
I did. Yep. Okay. Okay, absolutely.
Back to the point, but a lot of those products in those stores, the bag can say it has X whatever's in there, but it's not necessarily regulated. It's whatever the producer wanted to put on that label. Is that correct? Or am I misunderstanding that?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Is that the producer can put whatever is on the label and say that it has, you know, per mil, it's got, you know, 15 milligrams per mil. When you test it, there's usually, on average, an expected 5-10% variation just based on the fact that, you know, what you analyze should be pretty close. Some of them, I mean, that was the scary part is back in 2018 when we took a bunch of products off the shelf. A lot of them were pretty good, but 42% of those were mislabeled in some. So almost half were mislabeled or misrepresented, right?
Yeah.
So that's the problem is that, you know, you got to find a product that's consistent. And let's face it, a lot of these companies, they just go out and purchase like bulk CBD and other cannabinoids, tell you it's the perfect blend.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they put it in a bottle and try and sell it to you.
And then their supplier
goes dry and says, sorry, we can't get it to you. So now the product's off the shelf. And if it's working for your dog,
then what do you do?
You don't have that product.
Oh, that's a good point. I never thought about that.
Right. Yeah. So you want someone who has that full control from the farm to table, right? So we're going back to the farmer's market, where that farm to table thing is a great thing for a company to have is, you know, do they have the ability to make sure that every single quarter they're giving you the same exact product because they can control what's happening at that front end at the farm. That's one of the nicer things about Elevet is that, you know, we got a year's stock in case the apocalypse comes, right? So the apocalypse comes, there's a year's stock sitting in a freezer so that, you know, hey, guess what? Yeah. Something happens to the supply chain and, you know, tornado goes through the hemp fields or whatever. There's more available, right? And so that whole issue is a big problem now because the cannabinoid industry is kind of going bust, right? It used to be, I mean, in the human arena, because the FDA has come down and said things like, you know, hey, we're going to start to regulate this because it's a special plant, which it is.
Right.
And so the human supplement industry is kind of really taken a turn for the worse. And hemp CBD farmers have stopped making it because it's not a lucrative crop.
Too hard to regulate. They probably don't want the government to come in there and tell them how to do it. And they're just out. They're just going to go do something else. Right?
Well, it's going to cost more. It's going to cost more to make it. Right. So once it's regulated, because I think that's a great point. Like we love a farmer's market. However, you're like your farmer who's growing like a little plot of hemp in their backyard and then going to the farmer's market once a month and, you know, selling what they have. They're not sending that to an independent commercial lab to analyze exactly what the constituent pieces are that's in that little, you know, craft bag that they're selling it to. And so, cause that's an added expense. And so I think that's the point of it is that it, once you kind of seek to standardize that and make people really prove that what's on the label is what's in the bag, that you have a shift in the market. Mm-hmm. not necessarily a bad one. Like I'm, you know, I don't really care for regulations of any kind, but I would like to be able to trust what's in a bag.
Yeah. Your medicine, you probably want that regulated a wee
exactly.
bit, right?
Yeah.
And so, and so I think that that's the piece of it. And we always think, well, we want to be sure that what we want to be in the bags in the bag, we rarely think, but also I want to be sure that there's nothing bad in the bag that I'm not looking for. Mm-hmm. So all of that. And that's what, I guess that's what you're saying with Ellievet is that because you have control of the farm. So I'm going to guess you guys are fully vertically integrated, as they say.
Yes. Right.
For the process. So you've got it going in the ground, coming out of the ground, going into the bag and having that testing. So you glossed over another big piece there, Dr. Joe. You're glossing over these big pieces that are important to me as a veterinarian, which is there data that says that this is safe to give on a daily basis? So I'm thinking of these behavior issue dogs. I'm thinking of the seizure pets. You know, I don't want to give phenobarb, you know, if I don't have to, because it has some real side effects that are undesirable. Yeah. But if it's something that can be controlled with a daily CBD dose from a hemp-derived product, can I give it every day long term?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's nice since we last met is that we now have really like four studies out that showing long term, 3, 6, 12 month type of treatment. There's nothing negative that happens. There's no, you know, there's no strange behavioral stuff happening. There's no, we'll just say side effects to the liver or kidney and things like that. So
do you recommend, if I put a pet on phenobarb or potassium bromide or any of these sort of long-term anti-seizure meds, I'm monitoring, like you said, liver, kidney, all the things every 6 months or 12 months with blood work, et cetera, which for a lot of, pet owners becomes prohibitively expensive. But they need their pet to stay on the meds, obviously. So is it something that, are you still recommending that? Is that going to still
since we met last time, there are now studies, particularly in the seizure world, because the seizure medications can have a lot of side effects, right?
Oh, they're terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So now there's a lot of, there's a lot of work that's been done looking at things like the phenobarb, which is what is one of the first lines of defense, right? You put them on phenobarb, do the seizures diminish a little bit. Okay, I'm going to keep them on it, but it's not great for the liver.
They're subdued, like it basically sedates the dog a lot of times. So it's a happy balance, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure. And there's plenty of work on that molecule, right? The phenobarb. And, you know, that's what all the neurologists were very worried about, because people say if you give CBD, it's going to alter those levels in the blood. And you don't want to give CBD because we don't know enough about how it alters all these other medications that we use as neurologists. And now the data is coming out that at the doses that are recommended, which are around, 2 milligrams per kilogram twice a day, that and even up to like 10 milligrams, they didn't affect the phenobarb levels in the bloodstream. It didn't affect zonisamide levels in the bloodstream or the KBR, the bromide levels. So it didn't affect that. So you can give it concurrently and not worry about the other anti-seizure meds. You can keep them on it, put the CBD on top and see how that helps with the seizures. And, it's not a panacea. All the anti-seizure medications only have maybe a 30 or 40% response rate, right? Same thing with CBD. We're only going to see 40% of those dogs respond favorably. So it's not going to be the panacea for every seizure dog, but it's something that can definitely be used after you get the phenobarb on top and you say, it's not really working great, put the CBD, it can work better, right? The same thing goes is that, a lot of people were saying that, these doses are going to affect other drugs such as chemotherapy, right? Because a lot of people like to try it during chemotherapy. We just finished a study that should be published soon showing that when you give chemotherapies like doxorubicin,
that's a bad one.
Yeah. It's a big bad one. We don't want to alter those levels. And we put them on pretty high doses, 5 milligrams per kg twice a day. So 10 milligrams total a day of CBD did not affect doxorubicin pharmacokinetics. So it seems to be safe. So that's where all the specialist vets were like, I just want it to be safe. I don't want it to hinder. I don't want it to hinder the chemotherapy. And it doesn't look like it does. And even with vincristine, it may be synergistic, right? And be helpful. So,
so you can give a lower dose potentially of the vincristine in combination with the hemp. Wow.
So, I mean, that's been shown in a cell culture dish with cells that were, you know, lymphoma cells. That they kind of work together for some reason in that specific cancer. So, I mean, we're learning a lot. I mean, you know, four years out from our first thing. So.
Those studies are done in humans, or those studies done in animals, or what?
Yeah, those were done in dogs who are on chemotherapy.
That's
awesome.
That's super cool. Yeah.
That's okay. So it kind of sounds like CBD is the fun kid at the party who gets along with everybody. Because, you know, like it's not impacting the therapeutic levels or the blood levels of any of those chronic meds that we might give for, you know, the clinical diseases that CBD may help with, right? The seizures and the cancer. This whole thing about can help with itching blows my mind. I'm very excited about the potential there. I mean, this could be something that alters one of the most common things we see every day that we're treating all the time.
From the company's perspective, it's like, you know, you get the dog who just has that seasonal itch, right? And they're complaining the dog's itching much, and it's not a horrible, horrible atopic, you know, it seems as if like, everybody reaches, says, go take the Zyrtec. The Zyrtec should take the edge off. The Benadryl should take the edge off. I think Elevet would take the edge off just as well, right? And so, you know, it's like you can give that. And then if your dog has osteoarthritis and an itchy dog, well, God, now you got a 2-for-1 special, right?
So, yes. So they'll feel like, even better.
Right, exactly. And it was very funny in our derm study. That was one of the side effects that they listed. The side effects was the dog's mobility got better.
Yes.
The owners didn't even really know the dog had arthritis because they were so worried about the itch.
That's right.
So,
well, and sometimes dogs are so itchy, they can't play, they run to get the ball. So that's what I always ask
stop
owners. Like, if I throw the ball, will they have to stop on the way to itch?
Right.
Before they get to the ball or before they get back with the ball. Because that's what happens. And if owners are like, yeah, you know what? I can't even see my dog going to run and get the ball without stopping to itch. Like, now we have a problem. Okay.
Yes, so,
so not only can they just go to the ball without having to stop and itch on the way, they might go faster to the ball if they're on the Elevet.
Yep. Might get there a little quicker and back a little quicker, but
yes, a little quicker.
It's for us, it was like back in the day, we were saying it's not the panacea, you know, everybody's like saying, oh, you know, maybe it can cure cancer. It doesn't cure cancer. Right. But we are finding sort of some of these multi-benefit things. And it's not like we were, you know, hugely ingenious about this. There were grumblings in the human community that it might do these things. So we just put that to the test for dogs and found some real benefits. So.
Yeah. And I think that's why I enjoy having you come into the chat room and share with us, because you don't tell us what you think it's going to do. You share with us. Yeah. Listen, friends, we collected the data. We thought it might, and we collected the data, and now we know it does or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm happy to share that we've also done work now on post-surgical pain, right? Which is very different from long-term arthritic pain. And post-surgical pain doesn't help that much. So, you know, we're happy to tell people that after the spay, CBD isn't going to do much for that post-surgical pain or that knee surgery you just had. I mean, we published a negative paper. After TPLO, it did not help very much for the pain, but we did see there are fewer dogs on trazodone to keep them sedated. Right. So it's the anxiety piece again. Right.
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 So,
which is helpful.
Those are the interesting things. Right. It's helpful, but it's not helpful for the post-surgical pain. You may be able to use a lower dose of trazodone or maybe use, you know, this along with something that's going to help the dog recover and not act like a nut job in your house and screw up the surgery. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Jason, do you, Do you have any other burning questions
thus far? I've been a CBD fan, you know, ever since the baboon, and I think it's great. I think it's that was such a lifesaver for me, just anecdotally. Also for the baboon, but really for me, because it was really difficult to deal with to watch this guy go through this. And then anyways, so it's great. I love to talk about it. I think the future is bright and getting brighter as much as we really don't like regulation. Like, that's a bad word. However, in this situation probably is important because people realize that hey, I'm going to try it for everything, and everyone's out to make a buck, and they're going to do stuff, you know, not great and cause some problems. So I think once we get past this regulation portion, I think it's going to explode even more. And who knows what it's going to help and solve, especially in the pet industry. I think it's fantastic.
Yep. No, I think there are plenty of directions to go, and scary to say, there's more cannabinoids to study.
Right. Exactly.
So we're
so,
kind of
so many more to study.
Yeah. I mean, there's you know, interesting study that came out in cats with gingivostomatitis, right? Saying that those cats, you know, gained weight. And that's always a problem when cats have gingivostomatitis. They just don't eat very well. They lose weight. People get upset. You know, didn't cure their gingivostomatitis, but they ate better, right? So it's these little nuanced things where we're going to find little niches where CBD can fit into that treatment regimen. So, you know, it's an exciting time. And then there's things like CBG, which I won't even get into, but just to prime you for maybe another podcast in 4 years, we'll be talking about some of these other cannabinoids and how they may
shorter than 4 years, infection. I think,
not,
right?
It will not be four years.
Come on, it's going to take off. You guys are going to solve the world's problems with this stuff.
Right. So there's just so much to study, and there's so many different cannabinoids that this is we'll be talking until they put us in the ground. So
if you wouldn't spread your talent so thin and do something all over the place, if you would just focus on CBD, imagine how far we could get. This is really your fault, actually. All right. It is not a panacea.
Not a panacea, but we're going to have different cannabinoids for different indications at one day, and just be able to kind of pick and choose. Kind of like we do the pet foods off the shelf. I'm a nutritionist. It's like, I got the letter. I got the G's, the D's, the C's, you know, we're going to say, here's the one for this.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you that the very first time I met you years ago, and you said, we were just getting started with, hemp and CBD. And when you told us how many terpenes there were alone in, you know, the plant, was it 250 or 400?
Yeah, right. There's over 400 different molecules in the hemp plant.
And we've studied one and four that anyone was studying, that anyone had looked at. I thought, yeah, okay, he might have to come back.
Yeah.
he might have to come back.
I'll be honest, we've characterized the plant. And we found a new cannabinoid in the Elevet plant, the one that we use. So everybody's excited, right?
Yeah.
We found a new cannabinoid that's not been characterized. And they're like, this is really interesting. So, you know, there's just so much we still don't know and need to learn.
I love that we have the two rails, right? Like, you're staying in the lane of it's therapeutic. And then the other rail is it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes, so we won't hurt anything. But we know for a fact we can help some things, right? We're not even guessing. We know for a fact. That's why you have the PK study. That's why we have a dose. You're talking about a specific dose by body weight, not just, give them some. So I like that. I know the chatterbox is like that. We want to know that we're doing something concrete for our pet. We want to know that we're not hurting them because it is safe. We can trust what's in there. I mean, those are the two big points of it for us. And so, Dr. Joe, if there was one thing that you wanted veterinarians to know and one thing that you wanted pet owners to know about hemp and the CBD world, what might those two things be for each puppy?
Well, I think for the veterinarian, I think it's a lot of vets, and there are even surveys that most vets don't feel comfortable talking about it and don't feel comfortable using it. It's like, it's time to get comfortable and to put it in the toolbox. It may not be something you prescribe every day, but you'll have that really old crunchy dog who's got a little bit of just not with it. Owners are like, he just doesn't interact with us. And it's like, that's one of the things we see is you put him on this and all of a sudden the dog just is brighter, right? And so the veterinarian should really start to put it in the toolbox and start playing with the whatever it is. They're, you know, playing with it. It's a hammer or a screwdriver to you, whatever it is. And then I think for the owners, it's all, I think it's about the safety. Is this safe to give? And, you know, study after study has shown it's safe. There's only one enzyme that tends to go up that's associated with just metabolism called Alk-Fos. That's a pretty benign enzyme and a very, very, we'll just say, old sage and wise clinician who's written a textbook that we've all read.
Yeah.
A man from California.
Uh-huh.
And he's been on our advisory board and he just keeps going, why do you keep talking about that enzyme?
No one cares.
Right. It's the most useless enzyme on a chemistry panel. So,
but also it goes back down. Like when you remove it,
yeah, it goes up and down and it goes up and down with a lot of different things
as a problem.
Right. So,
yeah.
So it's like, it's safe for the owners. Understand that you should talk to your vet about the dosing. Don't talk to somebody at the local, you know, my CBD store or whatever, you know, talk to your vet because your vet is now slowly becoming more and more educated and you'll find vets that'll talk to you about it now.
Yeah. And I think that's the wonderful thing, is that, because also in fairness, folks, I see Dr. Joe doing his part for getting the word out because I see him at the biggest conferences. He's on the lecture slate and he's talking about data surrounding this, and not talking about his perceptions or how he feels that it looks, but actual data to know that we're actually having an impact. And I think that's wonderful. If you want more information, don't drive off the road. If you're listening in your cars, we know many of you do. There are going to be links in the show notes to a lot of the things that he's referenced so that you can find it there. And folks, so I would say, go talk to your veterinarian and ask them what they know about CBD. Check out the Ellie Vet website. They also have a whole lot of educational stuff there for owners and for veterinarians alike.
And I'll be honest with you, now Ellivet has ellivetacademy.com where you can go get CE as a veterinarian and owners awesome. And anybody can get on and learn. Just learning. It's not branded. It's just about cannabinoids. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And no one should be afraid of learning.
Yes.
At all. All right. So yeah, so we'll put a link to that as well for folks to check out. Yeah. So don't sit at home and wonder if it could help your pet. Talk to your veterinarian. All right. So thank you so much for joining us again, Dr. Joe Wachschlag, at Cornell and at Ellie Vet, talking all about CBD and hemp for your pet. I think that's all I have, Jason. Something else?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. And there we have it. I'm Dr. Jen the Vet.
And I'm Dr. Jason.
And we'll catch you all in the next episode.
The Professional Animal Care Certification Council, or PAC, brings independent testing and certification to the pet care services industry. Is your dog's daycare or boarding kennel or a groomer manned by PAC certified professionals? Don't know? If you don't know, you gotta ask. Look for the PAC emblem at your facility to make sure that your pet's receiving the highest level of professional pet care, because we all know it's safer in a PAC. Your PAC CE code for this episode is CC220088.
This episode is brought to you by Full Bucket Veterinary Strength Supplements, the leader in digestive health for dogs, cats, and horses.